Welcome to Maxed Out Man, helping you become the man you were made to be.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Davis from the Maxed Out Man podcast. This is episode number 59. I'm here with Bodie Aldridge from Australia. He'll fill us in on that as well. I did want to remind you that if you want information about what we do, you can find us at maxedoutman.com. We offer all kinds of stuff there. We're also on pretty much every social media platform, so just search for Maxed Out Man on that. So, hey, let me give you a quick intro on Bodie. Bodie teaches male business leaders to connect with their presence, purpose, and passion to create a life of freedom, flow, abundance, and joy. Having coached business leaders around the globe for the last 23 plus years, I'm assuming, Bodie's developed a simple yet effective process to help men experience freedom, flow in life, and to lead with presence, purpose, and passion. I got full disclosure, Bodie wanted to, we originally scheduled a little earlier, and I know Bodie had to go out and get some surf in. So that's actually like the perfect reason to put off any meeting, any call, any podcast or whatever. I'm not a surfer myself, but I had a conversation with a buddy of mine that lives in San Diego last week, runs a very successful business, but he goes out to surf 4 times a week there in San Diego. He just, you know, that's just his thing, time away, getting to know, you know, all that stuff. I usually do walks and stuff outside it when it's nice. We were 68 below zero wind chill 2 weeks ago here. And so we don't necessarily go out and do a lot of activities in the weather when it's like that. But it's warming up now and beautiful snow today, so we can't complain that much. So hey, so that's like the I really appreciate you being here. We were just talking a little bit, and I think we already have a great connection. I'm super excited about this conversation. I gave kind of the LinkedIn level bio there, but I'd love to hear you just expand on that. Go as long as you want, as early and late as you want, however you want to explain it, but let us know more about what you do and what you've got going on.
Yeah, and I love that link, you know, for the listeners around, you know, on the hero's journey, one of the keys is to develop a daily practice. Yeah, and as you know, through your, you know, fitness and, you know, going for walks, you know, for me it's surfing, yoga, and any of the listeners, like if you really want to lean into what you're offering, Kevin, what I offer, that's one of the things. And I talk a lot about commitment, what commitment really means. And that's been my journey, you know. So briefly, my first 20 years I was an attorney. I, you know, went to college because mum said go to college. And been married 40 years, you know, 4 children, 10 grandchildren. And so, you know, it's been the life of, you know, being a householder. And, you know, in my late 30s, there were a couple of things happened. Yet one of the things was I really realized that I was sitting on the fence with my practice, with my health practice. I was doing okay, like I was doing triathlons and I was always healthy surfing. Yet there was a point when I really committed to it. And that was a key part of kind of what unfolded. You know, I got a business coach into my legal practice, and pretty quickly, you know, she said, "You're not that passionate about this. You know, why don't you come and train and play with me?" And so over a period of 2 years, and I love the way purpose reveals itself. Like it wasn't, you know, organized and I didn't have this is what I'm going to do, but I had a deep intention to fully express myself. And that was in my early 40s. And since then, I've been traveling the globe, working with leaders, business leaders, men, and really teaching, you know, the key components of, you know, the masculine, you know, things like what is presence? We're so distracted these days. Mm-hmm. What is purpose, really? What is a purpose-led life? And, of course, passion, you know, and as a lot of your guests and listeners, you know, passion for your children, passion for your beloved. Passion, leaning into life, fully expressing life, you know. So it's been quite a ride.
Sounds like it. Congrats on 40 years. I'm actually pretty much almost exactly 10 years behind you on the calendar and with marriage. Yeah. And I think that, you know, for us, we had a chance to grow up together 22 and 21 when we get married. And it's been awesome. And we've been up and down, but things get better every day. Yeah, it's interesting because your journey, I say often, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And so like you went to obviously law school and had your own private practice and all that. But you're like, I mean, I'm sure you'll look around saying, do I really want to do this? Not only tomorrow and the next day, but for the next 30 years of my life, right? Like, it was there like this. And sometimes those things come in a different continuum, right? Like, I'm absolutely freaking miserable in what I'm doing versus, you know, I can do this, but like, I don't really enjoy doing it. So why don't I look for other things? And how can I find that passion, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, like not having a mentor like myself at that time. And when I work with clients, particularly in that demographic, like 40s to sort of mid 50s, the real key, Kevin, is it's not changing the external without changing the internal. Right. So a lot of men, you know, the essential driver for us as men is freedom. We're looking for freedom. It's the hero's journey, the holy grail. Yet when we're young, we're looking for it outside ourselves. Yet we think it's somewhere there on the mountaintop, you know, going to India, you know, going on a surf trip. And so the nuance is, if you can do some of the inner work, which is just about getting to know yourself, getting more present with yourself, loving yourself, then absolutely, there a lot of the listeners are probably in jobs that may not light them up. Yet what I say is don't jump out of it, because again, a lot of the demographic are probably have mortgages, married, kids. The job's providing a level of security and certainty, and in some ways that part of your life, yet that is your purpose. You know, I've committed, look at your journey. You made a commitment to your wife and your children. You probably resisted it at times, like most men, but at the end of the day, you also knew part of that commitment was, I am here to provide a level of certainty and security. And this job, inverted commas, quote unquote, serves that purpose for now. Yeah. So if you do the inner work, you realize it's not leaving where you are now. And then you start to lean into a purpose-led life, inquiry, reflection, opportunity. Then the form, the outer form, yet will reveal itself. And it could be 6 months, it could be 2 years. But I think that's the continuum, as you say.
Yeah, that's with me in particular. And I joke on this podcast, sometimes I feel like these are, you know, let's feel free to have a coaching session with me for my own edification and then let the listeners learn along. But for me personally, I have four businesses, and I've said this on the podcast before, but I have four businesses, about nine brands. I do consulting. I have coaching and all that. But what I've found is my other businesses, I love the creation aspect of creating new businesses. My wife has tons of hobbies, automotive, welding, baking, cake decorating, all of these things. She's like, your hobby is literally creating new businesses. And that's true. Like, I just love the creation process of it. But with the, you know, we started Maxed Out Man a little over a year ago, and it was in part altruistic because I want to help men be better. And it's also as a means to do, you know, there's a financial component, obviously, because we're trying to make money while we do our thing. But I've found that with my other businesses that continue to grow and do their thing, that helps support my passion for what I'm doing with Maxed Out Man. Without those things and without maintaining those things, I couldn't do what I'm doing right now, because I couldn't, like you said, paying the mortgage, you know, paying for trips and paying for the light bill, and in our case, paying a lot of heating bills. I couldn't make those happen. So to your point, even though my passion is with, and I've, you know, somebody said to me the other day, he's like, I can see on your face that this is what you've been waiting to be doing. And I was like, absolutely. This is something I'm just so psyched to be doing this and to see these next journeys. But to your point, I didn't just sell everything and start the new thing, right?
Yep, that's it. And that's the real setup, particularly if we don't understand freedom and commitment, you know, the paradox. You know, true freedom only comes from true commitment. Yeah. And, you know, we have a lot of cultural misinterpretation of commitment, yet you're committed to your wife, you're committed to your children. Most of the listeners in that demographic, it's like you've made that choice. And commitment is, I choose to have no more choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with that commitment comes beautiful opportunity, some challenges. And so, yeah, it's honoring that commitment by being the provider, and whatever your dynamic is with your partner, you know, you can, you know, co-income, you know, she may be bringing in more income. Yet it doesn't stop exactly what you say, the passion projects. It doesn't stop you leaning into your hobbies. The challenge, and I'll be interested on your journey with Maxed Out Man, is that the seduction is that because I love this, like I love surfing, yet the truth is I'm never going to be a professional surfer or a surf coach.
Right.
And so that's the seduction, is just because I'm passionate doesn't necessarily mean it's going to end up being my income or my business.
Yeah.
And there will be areas that will be like the creativity you bring to building brands, you know.
Yeah. And I want to explore that more in my case. And it's funny because I've got a lot of friends. I run in this entrepreneurial circle. You know, a lot of my friends are entrepreneurs and or small business people. But it's interesting that you can find people that have one side of the entrepreneurial journey, which is like the spirit of entrepreneur. But then unfortunately for a lot of them, it's not matched with the skill set, the knowledge, and the drive to meld those things together. And therefore, it's like, you know, I have multiple brands. Some have been more successful than others. I can run those concurrently. I kill off the ones that don't perform well. But I'm fairly confident to know that if I create a new brand, I know how to drive that forward, you know, and to produce it. But I have friends that are like, you're in your like 15th different business in the last 2 years, and they all lasted 2 weeks. Right. So to your point, just because you're passionate about something doesn't mean that that's something that's actually going to come to fruition. And I think a lot of people kind of miss that along the entrepreneurial journey, is that they have a hard time being discerning with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a few layers to that. One of it is, again, it's the outside in model. It's like, oh, this looks interesting. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I could make this my business and income, I will be happy. Instead of going, what brings you joy? What brings you happiness now? And how do I express that? And the other piece, and I'd be interested, Kevin, if you reflected on, because entrepreneurs, being an entrepreneur and working with entrepreneurs, if you look at some of the ingredients and just looking at, you know, your energy and meeting you and, you know, what you do with your physical health, what does commitment mean to you? Commitment and discipline, because that's what entrepreneurs have.
For me, it's just like, it's this, we talked about on the last podcast, which is, it's just do it, right? Yep. Like it's like, there are just things. And for me, we live kind of in a more traditional role sense, gender role sense within my marriage, and it works great for us. For other people, it doesn't work. This wouldn't work for them. My wife's a total badass. Welder, car builder, boxer, you know, homemaker turned into all those things once the kids left the house. And so she just kind of reinvented herself. So other than opening the occasional pickle jar, my wife totally can do pretty much anything she needs to do without me. However, she allows me and wants me to be the provider, the protector, those kind of things. But from a commitment standpoint, you know, let's use exercise, for example. A lot of times I tell people that, hey, it's not if I'm going to work out today, it's what time am I going to work out?
Yeah.
Because that's a mindset shift, that it's not optional. You know, sometimes you just don't feel right. Your body needs rest or whatever. And that's a different thing. But habitually, it's that way. I was telling someone the story the other night. My wife got home a little bit later than I did. We were both at separate events. I got home. I'm up in my, we have a two-story house. So I'm up in the bedroom, kind of on my phone, just doing what you do to kind of decompress from the day, which I don't recommend social media because that's not exactly just decompressing. I think I was listening to a Jack Reacher book on audiobook or something, but I heard her come in. And so, and I think this is a great example of commitment. My first tendency is I'm going to lay there on my ass and wait for her to come upstairs, right? Like I'm sitting on the bed, the dogs are up there, I'm comfortable. But in my mind, and then I hear her and I know that she needs to eat dinner. She had skipped dinner. So I know she's going to be downstairs for a while. So I made the conscious choice, just do it. Get up off your ass, go downstairs, greet her, tell her you love her, you're happy to see her, and sit down and eat dinner with her while you talk. right? Like that's a commitment that I'm making, and I'm trying, you know, I don't always get that right. None of us do, but I'm trying to get to that level of this serves her in a way that I know. And she said later, we talked about it. We sit out in the hot tub most nights. And she said later that night, that made such a huge impact on my evening and on my night. And it was something so simple. It took me 40 seconds and just the effort of like the giant effort of standing up and walking. But I think that that's for me anyway, that's kind of what commitment means in those different scenarios.
Yeah. And that real being of service to the feminine, being of service to your beloved. It's a great example. And so commitment means I choose to have no more choice.
Yeah. Walk through that with me.
Yeah. Cause it's a paradox. Yeah. And as you know, the deeper you go on the journey, you hit paradox, you hit mystery, those sorts of things. So the paradox is this. And if we think about relationship for, you know, a lot of young men, commitment phobia, commitment fears, you know, all of that cultural conversation. The truth is this, that when you fully commit to something, you're all in.
Mm-hmm.
You choose to have no more choice. I'm fully in. Yeah. Now that might be, you know, committed to your push-up challenge, or it might be committed to your 12-month goals. It might be committed to your marriage. It might be committed to your business. But what happens is as soon as you commit to something, Kevin, the fears have to come up.
Mm-hmm.
All of the fears. You know, again, if you use your, you know, fitness, yeah, I commit to the push-up challenge, yeah? And it's like, oh, yeah, but I had a few drinks last night. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to do it today. Or, you know, the kids were sick and I didn't get much sleep. What happens for most people is that these fears come up, and after a while, instead of questioning the fear, what's the obstacle all about, they question their commitment. And it's the same in marriage. You know, think about, you know, you've been together a long time. Yeah, think of all the times that you've questioned it, you've doubted it, you've, you know, had your bags packed wanting to get out. Yeah, they're all the life lessons that commitment provides you with. Yeah. So the fear isn't in the way. The fear is the way. It's the way to learn more about yourself. What do I have to deal with? What do I have to overcome? And the paradox of commitment. So when you commit to your beloved energetically, I choose to have no more choice. The paradox is, of course you have choice. Yeah. Of course you can leave. Yeah. It's not that hard to stand up and get in your car. But what energetically you're actually saying is, I have choice and I choose to fully be here with you today, this moment. I choose to be here. I choose to be here. And commitment is micro choices all the time. I choose to be here. I choose to be here. And the energy of that, working with couples, you know, I often work with men and then with couples, is most guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, particularly early, you know, that first sort of 10 years in your marriage, metaphorically, most guys have your bag packed at the back door just in case you got to leave. There's a part of you that it's like, oh, if this gets too hard or this is the wrong one, and the divorce rates prove it. And I encourage anyone who's in a committed relationship is to unpack your bag, close the back door and lean in, fully lean into your beloved, fully lean into your marriage, your children, because the energy shift is huge. And the feminine knows it, like your wife the other night. The feminine goes, wow, this man is present. Mm-hmm. And committed to me. And there's nothing more uplifting for the feminine than a man who's energetically fully there, present, committed. And that's the dance. That's the paradox. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's the fun, right? Like that's the...
Yeah.
And it's crazy because, you know, so much in our culture, commitment, you know, it's the fear of commitment. Or if I commit to this, then I can't X, Y, Z. When we first got married, we were young, 21 and 22. We didn't know jack crap, you know, and so, but we've grown up together. But when we first got married, there was no, you know, we're both evangelical Christians. So we had kind of our faith basis there, but not from a guilt or obligation, but we had made a decision that divorce is not an option. It just, so there were no, you know, we never had bags packed because they would just sit there and gather dust. And we went early on in our marriage, I leaned into the corporate world and my success there. and leaned into that because I was afraid of my new child that I had and not knowing anything, not knowing what to do. Mm-hmm. I was afraid. I had so many fears about failure. But then on the other side, I had such success on the corporate world. So I leaned the wrong direction. And I basically fell on my face that way. And my wife, Michelle, she basically packed her bags and said, hey, I'm here with my stuff packed. If you'd like to come home now, we can work this out. And she, you know, she wasn't like, I'm going to go file for divorce papers, but she want, you know, it made the point. Yeah. And I completely turned my life around. I switched the commitment, and it's a long story, but I essentially had to tell my boss. I was in the beginning of a startup company during the dot-com days, and I was very successful. And I had to go to my boss and say, look, I can't do any of this crap anymore. I need to be home with my family, and here's what it needs to look like. And side note, in case you're wondering whether your purpose is, you know, how these adjust, I ended up getting a huge raise, didn't have to travel anymore, and I was traveling 6 days a week. And actually I got a blessing by being able to make that commitment and get my, you know, kind of that have your cake and eat it too kind of thing. But all that to say, if you're committing to the wrong side of to the wrong things, it has such an impact on your life. And I cannot imagine what my life would be like, my kids' lives would be like, my wife's life would be like now. And it's allowed us to serve couples throughout our marriage to help mentor, coach, and teach them how to not do those things and how to do them better.
Yeah, again, beautiful, beautiful story, you know, to illustrate. And you know, for any of the listeners, if you want to know what you're committed to, yeah, watch your behavior. And it's the same. Commitment can be very aligned with values. Yeah, and going back to your entrepreneurs, you know, a lot of those entrepreneurs aren't committed. They're not fully in. Yeah, it's a nice idea, but they're not fully in because you know what it takes. I know what it takes. It's like you've got to deal with all those fear flags. You're going to get knocked back. You're going to get rejection. You're going to have cash flow issues. And the thing with values is, you know, as you know, and with your belief system, values are very important. Mm-hmm. And most of them are subconscious for most people. But if you want to know what your values are, again, you know, if I want to know what your values are, just show me your calendar, show me your diary for the last month. Yeah, that will, you know, like a lot of people I work with, it's like, I really want to get fit. I just don't go to the gym.
Right. As it turns out, that's like, kind of important.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or I really want deeper relationships with my children. I just don't have time. And again, it's not right or wrong. It's just not aligned, you know. As you know, integrity, alignment with your commitment and values. It's like your behavior is telling you and the world what you value most. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you value corporate life, yeah, and you value that world, because in some ways it is a little bit easier because it's structured, yeah, then just be honest with yourself. Instead of saying, no, I really value family, I really value my health, you know, I value all these things. Yeah. And again, it's just, you know, commitment, values. It's just a reflection point for the listeners to go and be, you know, gently, lovingly honest with yourself and just go, yeah, what is my behavior demonstrating? And true change, Kevin, as you know, comes from inspiration or desperation. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of men, you know, we know what's going on with mental health. We know what's going on with physical health, all of those issues. A lot of men have isolated themselves, haven't had mentors, haven't had fathers. And it can get to the point of desperation when you would see it with your clients, where suddenly they realize they've got to make a radical shift, particularly around their physical health and their mental health. My invitation to the listeners is be inspired. You know, be inspired by who you are, you know, in the world. Be inspired by the work that's happening there and just make small shifts. You know, in flow states, I work a lot with presence and flow. You can cultivate flow in your life, and it literally can be 3 or 4% shift each day. You'd teach your clients this as well, you know, just those small shifts. It doesn't have to be radical. Can be, but it doesn't have to be. Yeah, just slowly moving the dial, developing. And, you know, eventually, as you know, getting, it's like people go to the gym 3 times and go, it doesn't work for me. Like, good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And for me, like even for people that work out all the time, it's, you know, I work out quite often, and I have now henceforth decided to call the time between America, you know, we're in America, American Thanksgiving and American New Year, that I'm going to refer to that as bulking season from now on.
Not carbo loading.
Right. But my wife is a baker. So I had actually reached one of the lowest body fat. I was super lean, super fit kind of last summer. And then I'm a sugaraholic. I love sugar. And so by having all this baking stuff around, I gained probably 10 pounds. It's not that big a deal. I can take it back off. I'm already halfway there. Just making changes. But it's that commitment. Like, I know better, but I wasn't fully committed over the holidays to not take the steps that I knew were going to bite me in the ass later. And it's a hell of a lot more enjoyable to eat your way to 10 pounds up than to cut your carbs and cut your, protein and all that stuff in order to get those 10 backs. But that's a really interesting thing. So explain to me what this flow thing, what flow and presence and all those. I'm trying to, because it's not something that I really understand that well. I understand like these, we would call them like baby steps. Like if you're not exercising now, go take a walk. If you are exercising now, set a different goal, like for yourself, doing triathlons and Ironmans and surfing every day and those kind of things. We've done a couple of marathons and a bunch of halves. And if you're like at one of those people and you've already done a marathon and your body can handle it, do an Ironman or a super marathon or ultra or whatever, right? Like always take that next step to do something more as long as it fits within your goals. But I'm interested in like purpose and flow and how all that works together for your average person.
Yeah. I mean, presence is a foundational piece. And, one of the 12 week programs I run is called From Distraction to Presence. Mm-hmm. Because again, in the Western world, we have so much stimulus, our thinking mind, 80,000 thoughts a day, most of them are negative. So we've got this incredible overload of stimulus. Mm. And as you know, when you're with Michelle, the difference when you're present and when you're not. Mm-hmm. When you thinking about
it just happened to me. I'm thinking that I need to go apologize to her after this because I have my office in my over to the right where I'm to my right is actually my workstation and it sits in the corner. So when she comes in, I can either typically I choose to turn around and I made the choice earlier to not turn around and I actually said, hey, I'm right in the middle of this stuff, but I could have taken 30 seconds. So to that point, go ahead. I interrupted your thought, but that's like my true confession moment, right? So
and great demonstration again for the listeners because this is what's going on all the time, and the studies now are incredible. There's a book by a gentleman called Johan Hari, H-A-R-I, called Stolen Focus. Yep, and what he's done through the neuroscience, he says if you're in the middle of a task and you get an interruption, a text message or, check an email or whatever, it can take the brain up to the 23 minutes to refocus.
Mm. Yeah. That's a long time.
It's a long time. It's like we live with all these tabs open. Yeah. Think about your laptop or your computer with all these tabs that are open all the time. And it's the least efficient way to be productive. It's the way we're conditioned because there's so much going on and we've got to be busy and all of that. So once we start closing a few tabs, and all I teach is some really simple practices, 10 minutes, 5 minutes a day can start to close the tabs, start to really get your present, embodied presence. Yeah. Like when you know the difference when you're doing a workout and you're not present and you are present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what a difference that makes to the workout, to the value of it, to your mindset. And so that's all we're doing. We're bringing people into presence. And interestingly, the most attractive thing for the feminine, is to be presenced by the masculine, to be seen, to be noticed, because the feminine driver is connection. Yeah, the masculine driver is freedom. So the feminine's looking for connection and they know when you're not present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they know it energetically, emotionally, cognitively. And when you are, and it's not present 24 hours a day. It's like just that 30 minutes, like you in the hot tub with your beloved. Yeah, it's like I'm fully present. I'm here. I'm listening. I'm connected. I'm in my body. I'm not thinking about the business. I'm not thinking about the, dogs or whatever it might be. Now, what happens once you cultivate presence? So flow is presence in action.
Okay.
Yep. And what we've noticed in a lot of the studies, and you'd appreciate this as an athlete, is that flow states, yep, in athletes in sport have been studied quite a lot. Because we know, you know, when you're running a marathon, when you're running a triathlon, there's a place when you just get in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's flow. You're not thinking, you're resisting. Yep, you're present. It's almost effortless. It's like, you know, you've done the prep, so you don't have to concern yourself. What's fascinating at working with elite athletes is a lot of them can reach it in their sport. But big part of what I teach them is, how do I bring that into my life? How do I cultivate that experience in my life with my children, with my beloved? And that's what happens, is the more present you get, the more you realize that you can create flow in your life. And any entrepreneurs out there, this is the way, the fastest way to build your business. Yep. Every day when you wake up, Kevin, there are two trains that leave your house. Yeah. One is the resistance train. One is the flow train. You know, you can wake up, kick your toe at the end of the bed and just have a bad day and start resisting. You know, you resist, I got to walk the dogs. You resist, I got to take the kids to school. You resist that the cash flow isn't working in the business. Or you can wake up in the day, do your morning practice, you know, do your workout or whatever, and get yourself present and in the flow state. Get your heart open and go, I'm just going to meet today from this place of presence and flow. I'm not going to resist. It doesn't mean I don't have challenges, problem solving, those sorts of things. And, you know, as you know, the speed of opportunity manifestation when you're in flow, people show up, opportunities show up, clients show up. And so it really is, and it's not difficult. It's just we haven't been taught this. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can you walk through that logistically? I'm like a very practical kind of thing. So I understand. Yep. I understand the mindset of that, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, and even in my own businesses and my own life, I'm a weird guy. My brain is one of those brains that just literally never shuts off, yep. which makes it a challenge. But my kids have always, and my wife, they're pretty sure I'm a robot. I was born with an innate ability to do kind of, you know, more processing per unit of time than some other people. That doesn't make me better. It just makes me different. And quite honestly, I wouldn't recommend it. You know, spending much time inside this noggin for anybody else. But how does that kind of, and so I understand the mindset and all that, but logistically, because everything you just described, I'm like, Bodhi, you're talking about me. You know, this is you're pointing out my internal flaws and all the things I struggle with. But walk us through that.
Yep. So again, if you distill it, and I'm sure with your clients that, you know, who want to lean into their exercise, you know, traditional cultures, most of the neuroscience, the physical science shows that a morning practice,
mm-hmm.
Amplifies, your day. Yeah. And obviously people who are busy, you can do your exercise at different times. But if you imagine each day, and this is one of the things I support my clients with, you know, and this, you know, win the morning, win the day, all of that mm-hmm. great work that's out there. So if you start the day with some time, for contemplation, for reflection, for prayer, for stillness, and move into your exercise, whatever it might be, you know, your workout, your run, your walk. What happens is you're already starting to settle and get more in your body. Yeah, because this busy mind, and as you say, you've been able to use yours as a tool. Yeah, so that the
my wife says I'm the tool, but I'm not sure if that's the same thing.
I've heard that. So the thinking mind is a fantastic servant; it's a terrible master.
Right.
And that's what we're wanting. We wanted to master, you know, as well as much as you master your physical wellness, it's mastering this beautiful tool we have called the thinking mind. And the way to do that is you just got to slow it down a little bit, get a bit present. That's why one of the first things I say to clients is, if you can get to nature, get to the park. You know, like, you know, in Montana, when on a nice day when you're out in the mountains, you know, that feeling is, that's presence.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm fully present. there's energetically, when we connect with nature, that's our natural state. And so then what happens is, and there's plenty of literature about how to organize your day, but from the inside out, a lot of people, the example I use is a bit like there's two woodchoppers, and they're going into the forest in the morning, and there's a lot of trees, plantation, recycled, all environmentally healthy trees. And they got a busy day. Think about your day, and they both go there, they've got their axe, and one of the guys goes, okay, I got to go. I got a lot of chopping to do. Chop, 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 chop. The other guy, he goes, absolutely. And every hour he stops. And he has a drink of water, does a few stretches, sharpens his axe, and then goes again. So who do you think, Kevin, actually cuts down more trees?
Yeah, the second guy, the one that has a sharper axe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And our mind and our emotional state is our axe. Yeah, if you're just doing, busy, doing, here's my to-do list, tabs are open, interruptions, you may feel like you're super productive. Yeah, but if you look at the other woodchopper, it's counter conditioning because it's like, hang on, he's having a break every hour and doing closing his eyes for 5 minutes or, walking instead of sitting on his stool all day. And so that's all we're talking about is sharpening your axe. Yeah, your mental axe, your physical axe, your emotional axe, and you will be more productive. And it's not that difficult. It's just a paradigm shift. Does that kind of give you a bit of territory?
Yeah, for sure. I'm kind of a nap guy, but I let my body tell me if I need a nap. Like literally, I'll sit in my chair, I'm working on something, and my brain just says, hey, it's time to recharge. And I'm one of those, if I'm not asleep in 60 to 90 seconds, I'm not going to sleep. So it's just like, I joke, and there's a little guy that has an on off switch that, turns it on and turns it off. So when I lay down, I know, but then I'm up in 15 to 18 minutes, I'm ready to go and, finish up the day. But I imagine, so when, as you're describing this morning practice, I kind of had this vision of you, that scene where the sun's coming up. I don't know where you surf. Facing east?
Up, yeah.
All right. So you're in the east, that sun's coming up, you're sitting out on the board, both feet over the board in the still water and just really reflecting on what you're doing. And in my vision, you're super ripped, just so you know, but
I'm not doing too bad, but I wouldn't say super ripped.
But that kind of imagery is something that came to mind for me, because that is to me, it's that, it's that stillness and listening to the stillness and listening to, there's a biblical term that calls listening to that still small voice. And in that, it's, you mentioned prayer, and in that instance, that Bible verse is talking about listening to the voice of God and really getting that connection with God. But if that's not your slant and, you're getting in touch with nature or the universe or whatever you happen to call it. When I love the ocean. I'm jealous that you get to go to the ocean every day, but I also love the mountains. So in the summertime, like you described, we go on really hard hikes that are super steep, but then when we get to the top of we'll do switchbacks and we'll get to different sections and we just stop and look over the valley. We're 8,000-9,000 feet high, we're out of breath, but then just to take in that majesty of what we're looking at, especially, is just that stillness. But there's some really practical stuff you can do, right? Like if you can't go out to the ocean and surf and do all that stuff, I do treadmill. I actually sit in a little infrared sauna that I have. I'll do cold plunge, which is not, can be reflective, but it's also painful. But all of these things and taking walks in the summertime. And so it's just figuring out, I journal a little bit and set kind of my tasks for the day. But it's all those little things, right? So you have to figure out what's the best way to figure out what works for you? Just fake it till you make it kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a good point. And, that, again, the saying of know thyself, what you're really wanting to do is cultivate that relationship with yourself.
Mm.
And so, the fake it till you make it. The thing is, one is, if you're committed to this, yeah, then it is a little bit of trying different things. You know, what works for you, the gym or home gym or sauna or yoga. Yet the commitment is the key. You're not shopping around. You see guys who do, you know, 2 weeks at the gym and go, that's not for me. And then they do 2 weeks cycling, and but they're not actually committed.
Right.
Yeah, to really, you know, having a closer relationship with themselves through their physical body, their emotional body, their mental body. And one of the simplest things, and I think it was, I think it's Joe Dispenza who talks about it. Yep. You know, the one way to slow the mind and train the mind is to train the body to just sit still. Now, for a lot of the listeners, they're going to be like, whoa.
That's super hard. Like that's
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. And if you think about it, it's actually physically so simple. Like if you get up in the morning and you basically find a chair somewhere in your apartment or your house with no phone, no distractions, and see if you can just sit for 5 minutes. And your monkey mind, your ego mind will kick and scream, and I've got to do this, and I've got to check my phone, and what about this, and what about that? But it will start to slow down. Yeah. These 80,000 thoughts a day, it's like slowing a fast train down. You don't jump in front of it and go, stop.
Right.
You just got to lovingly, gently start to slow it down. So it's a really simple and challenging process. Yet if you think about it, I would say most listeners would have 5 minutes where they could find somewhere to sit. And it's a game changer because suddenly you start to go, oh, all of these thoughts are running my life. Yeah. And I say I want to get fit, but I don't go to the gym. And I say I love my wife, but I'm doing, you know, 12 hours a day. So you start to notice and get connected with a deeper part of yourself.
Yeah. I would guess that first day of 5 minutes could be torturous. For some of us. I've actually been practicing. I was listening to a podcast the other day and they talked about not getting on any kind of social media for the first 90 minutes of your day.
Yeah.
And it's a great practice. I've been working on it and also changed my nighttime routine from a sleep standpoint, you know, lowering the lights, red lights, blue blocking lights and all that stuff. But that influx of all that BS that the world is trying to serve us and trying to put into our brain, like just keep that out, because at first thing in the morning, literally that sets the tone for your brain for the entire day.
Exactly, I
think that's great. I love the idea of just sitting. That's my friend does that every morning for about a half an hour and just kind of sits. Mm. He can see the sun come up in his house, and you know, it's just, I need to practice more of that, because my tendency is to get in the sauna and I'm thinking about things and I'm thinking about what I have to do and all that stuff. And so I need to, again, it's a mindset shift to really slow my brain down, which is, it is a little bit like slowing down a runaway train, you know, and so that's a good practice to do for sure.
Yeah. And any of the listeners, if you've got a park nearby, you know, some green space, you know, obviously don't all live in the mountains. You know, sitting still in your apartment or your house is a good start. If you can, you know, getting to the park and just taking a few breaths, you know, these are just simple things. And it's interesting because if you think about, particularly as men, like when we meet the world, when we get triggered by the world or when we get challenged by the world, normally there are three responses that come up for us as men. So one will be, we'll react. Yeah, we'll react. We'll want to blame. We get angry. We want to, you know, someone cut us off in the traffic, or, you know, the kids aren't listening. Yeah. The second is we distract. Yeah. And that's all we're doing with social media. We want to distract ourselves from the moment. We react, we distract, or we repress. Yeah. And a lot of the listeners out there, you know what it's like when you're repressing, you collapse. It's like, I can't meet this challenge, I'm just going to go within. Yeah, but you're not actually dealing with it, you're repressing it. And so for me, particularly this distraction, which is so, you know, one of the big things when I work with couples, the wives say to me, can you just get him off the phone? Just, you know, like come home from work and they just, you know, as a generalization, it's like just go scrolling for 40 minutes on the phone. That's distraction from the moment. And so for any of the listeners, if you really want to live life fully, which is what purpose is all about, yeah, then it's about noticing what your patterns are, particularly distraction. And when I talk about purpose, you asked the question earlier. So purpose, the reason particularly for men we're so interested in purpose is we're trying to find meaning in our life. Yeah. And you have your faith, which obviously provides you with a lot of meaning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of purpose. The reason we want to find meaning is our deepest desire is to fully experience life. Yeah. We want to fully live this life. Yeah. All of it, the feelings, the messiness, the joy. Yeah. And that again comes from the inside out. A lot of people say, do what brings you joy. What I say is bring joy to what you do.
Mm.
You know, bring joy because you can cultivate it from the inside out. Again, if you get to know yourself, you can bring joy. As entrepreneurs, I often talk about the 80-20 rule. So the 80-20 rule in business is the most successful entrepreneurs spend 80% of their time with their superpowers, their gifts, where they add the most value to their business. And there's 20% of the time where there's stuff you got to do.
Right.
But most business owners, it's the other way around. They're spending 80% of their time in the staff, chasing their tail, chopping with a blunt axe. Yeah. And only 20% where they add the most value, whatever your superpowers are, whatever your gifts are. And so if you can start to notice that and realize, even for yourself, correct me if I'm wrong, there's 20% of the time where you've got to do the invoicing or you've got to do the follow-up. You can resist that and push it off and avoid it and procrastinate, or just go, it's part of business.
Mm-hmm.
Bring joy to the invoicing. Bring joy to the follow-up. Cultivate it from the inside. You'll be amazed. Those simple, again, those little moves, like notice where you're resisting as an entrepreneur or a business owner and go, this is just part of building a business. You can't build a business without doing invoices.
Right.
And if you're early on in your business, you probably don't have the resources to have a team. Does that make sense? Can you see how you can bring your energy to it instead of resisting it?
Right. And I think that that's important because that same philosophy or ideology works in marriage and relationships and how you serve your community and how you serve yourself. That 80-20 rule is not, it's not just for business, right? It's those things that have to be, I've used this term many times, but it's the have to's versus the get to's. And so our lives can be so filled with have to's and like by our own design, right? Like I look around the yard and I'm like, oh, I got to do this, this, and this, and this, and my project hasn't been done or whatever, versus I'd love to go take a hike with my wife this morning instead of doing yard work, right? Like that's a get to versus a have to, and really practicing in that relationship and just in my own enjoyment of almost forcing myself to do the things that I actually want to do, which sounds really stupid and counterintuitive, but it's almost like you have to force yourself to do the things that you want to do.
Mm. Yeah. And it really is, again, you have that awareness, you've got a relationship with your choices. One of the biggest shifts early on in the journey is a lot of people feel they don't have choice.
Mm.
That victim mentality. Yeah. It's that, that blame and that judgment. I can't because I've got to do this for the wife. I can't because I've got to do this for the boss. And if you're in that victim mentality, again, it's not right or wrong. It's just exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sustainable, And one of the first places when you start to notice the thinking mind is you realize I always have choice.
Yeah.
You do have choice. You have to, whatever. Is in front of you. And one of the things to know for all the listeners is when you look at the world, there's only two things you're ever going to see: the way you want it to be or the way you think it should be.
Mm.
And as soon as you go into the shoulds, as soon as you go into trying to control the external world, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
It's about accepting, accepting this is the way it is. And I have choice. What do I choose now? Do I choose to, keep leaning into my business? Do I choose to have a conversation with my wife? Do I choose? And so, that subtle shift, because so many people try and control the external world. If only the mother-in-law would change. this Christmas she's going to change. Yeah, I've just got to, you know, I just got to get her to show up differently. It's like, I've just got to get her to
change her entire personality for one day, right? Like,
exactly. You know, and we put so much energy into that and so much self-judgment and judgment of other and blame and resistance instead of going, okay, my mother-in-law is my mother-in-law. Yeah, I have choice here. I have choice how much time I want to spend with her. I have choice how I respond to her, you know.
How judgment, I treat her, criticism, all of
feedback. How much? Exactly. Yeah. It's common sense, yet it's a big shift for people. Just to know you actually always have choice. It doesn't feel that way sometimes.
Well, and I've been using this phrase a lot and telling this story. So if you've heard the podcast very many times, you'll probably hear it again. But there's this song in Christian music that he says, "Dear younger me, it's not your fault." And I hate that song. I hate that line. The song's good. That line is really stupid because I think to myself, it probably is your fault. Almost 99% of the things that are happening in your life right now are as a result of the decisions, the actions, and the thoughts that you've had and things that you've done, right? And so, but I say that, and then I contrast it with the good news is, if it's your fault, you're in control of changing it and to facilitate change in the situation. If it's not your fault and you're a victim, which don't get me wrong, I do know that I'm not an idiot. There are situations when things happen to people that are beyond their control ultimately, you know, but if it's your fault, you can actually change it. My kids joke with me. So when they call mom, they want encouragement. They want to be built up and all that. And both of them, I have girls that are 26 and 24. And they both call me for what we call, "Dad, I need these stop being a little bitch talk." And all that, and what that means is, hey, you just need to do the things that you already know that you're supposed to be doing because you know, school is not piling up on you because it just that you have too much work. School is piling up on you because you're not doing your homework and you're watching Netflix or playing on your phone. You know, you have bad finances because you buy stuff you can't afford. You know, your car looks like crap because you won't go clean it. You know, all these different things. And so it comes down to that, you know, stop being a little bitch. And I actually talk about that with my own self to say, hey, you just need to do this. And guess what? What's happening to you right now is as a result of the decision you made last week.
Yeah. And again, back to that commitment. The other piece, you know, it's not my fault, or it is my fault, you know, and it's, you know, if you think about your journey of, you know, really loving yourself and getting to know yourself, one of the fundamental teachings of Christ is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And self-forgiveness. So forgiveness is to give up the judgment. Yeah. To forgive. Yeah. And love is forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And so any of the listeners who, you know, we've made mistakes, yeah, we've been inappropriate, there's guilt, there's shame, yet the way to move through that is to fundamentally give up the self-judgment, acknowledge it, recognize it, yeah, but if you keep beating yourself up, keep whacking yourself with it, yeah, then you're just going to stay in that place, that loop of self-judgment, self-critic, victim. And so you just reminded me of the power of forgiving ourselves for the mistakes we've made, acknowledging those feelings of guilt and shame and fear, and realizing we have choice. We are the author of our life as men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What life do you want to lead? So just reminded me. I think that's a nice little hook for people.
Yeah, I really like that because, you know, with your example with the forgiveness of Christ, there was no judgment attached to that. And I think what's hard for us as people is that we always, you know, there's this whole phrase, right? Forgive, but don't forget. It's like, no, it's actually okay to forget, you know, it's okay to forgive someone completely. And that's the teaching of, you know, every forgiveness, if you look from a biblical standpoint, you know, the woman at the well who had been married 5 times and was with a guy that wasn't her current husband, the prostitute in the square, and all of these people that he forgave. And this isn't, you know, we're not proselytizing or anything like this. It's just a great example, whether you believe in this or not. But like that idea of forgiving with no judgment for other people and for yourself, I think is great. Someone explained the difference between guilt and shame to me. Shame is, guilt is something where you look at something that you've done and you want to change it. Shame actually says, this is something that's wrong for about me. The shame is an internal, this is actually something is wrong with me. And so that's the difference. So you can use guilt to say, okay, well, I did that thing that was wrong and I can fix that, versus somehow shame is one of those things where you actually believe that this is something wrong with yourself. But I love the idea of of the forgiveness without the judgment, for sure.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's forgiving, giving up the judgment. And yeah, the shame, guilt stuff. Guilt, shame is, you know, it's like all the things we've hidden in the cupboard under the stairs, the parts of us that we've repressed and suppressed. And as you say, from that, and I love that distinction, is fundamentally I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm bad. Yeah. And yeah, guilt, the reason we set up guilt is somewhere between our ears. Think about it for yourself, Kevin, is there's the perfect Kevin. You know, the way you'd show up as a husband, as a father, as a business owner. And then sometimes you look in the mirror and go, oh, that's not the perfect
guy. Yeah, who the hell is that guy?
Exactly. And as soon as you judge yourself between the illusion of the perfect Kevin and the current reality, that's where the guilt kicks in. Yeah, because the perfect Kevin wouldn't have said that. The perfect Kevin would have done a workout. The perfect Kevin wouldn't have said that to the mother-in-law, whatever it might be. Right. And so, yeah, it's that, again, it's that judgment of self as opposed to just acceptance and going, okay, I made a mistake. What do I choose now?
Yeah. I wrote down a note here because this is something that's central in all of your messaging, and it's the name of your podcast and all that. Can you kind of define what true freedom, what this idea of true freedom actually means? And you kind of alluded to it early, but I want to just revisit that. And so we can, and I think this is a good place to kind of circle back and bring this all into one place.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, the podcast is called True Freedom. For any of the listeners, it's on all the usual podcast outlets. So the two parts to freedom, yeah. So again, remember, most of us men, it's essential driver, the holy grail for us is freedom. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. But most of us look outside ourselves, particularly as young men in our 20s. Yeah, we're searching, you know, we go looking for it. You know, we go to India, we go on a surf trip. We, you know, we're looking for this elusive holy grail until one day we wake up and go, ah, it was on the bedside table all along.
Right.
And that's when we start to do a bit of the inner inquiry, a bit of the self-reflection. So the two key parts to freedom, and Christ taught this well, is the first is freedom from suffering. So there's a difference between pain and suffering. Yeah. So life is full of painful experiences. Yeah. But suffering is when we hang on to them, when we attach to them. Yeah. We push away from them. So the first key part of true freedom is, how do I let go of the suffering? Yeah. The second is that true freedom is our natural state. So if you think about your daughters when they were born, what did you see, Kevin? What did you experience when they were born?
Yeah, just that true love and intimacy and just that, like, oh, I can't believe, first of all, I'm scared because I can't believe I'm responsible for this thing. But just that, like, there's almost like no thought process involved in the love aspect that you have for that child, right? Like, it's so natural and innate that it's not like, oh, I now have to make a decision to love this child. It's I just was, and I just did.
Yeah, exactly. And did you see the innocence and love in that being?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and that's in all of us. I can see that in you. Christ saw it in everyone.
Yeah.
That's what he taught. Our innate natural state is love and innocence. And it's been conditioned. Yeah, it's been, you know, through our journey, through our life, through our childhood. But true freedom is remembering and reconnecting with that. So if you can let go of the suffering and the resistance to life and reconnect with your natural state of love and innocence, as Christ taught, it's liberating. Freedom is liberation. Yeah, that's the journey. That's the hero's journey. And then we can serve, truly serve as Christ taught. Yeah, bring our gifts, bring our superpowers, but not from the ego, from our essence.
Mm, yeah. And to be able to make those connections and, you know, altruism or whatever. And why do you think that so many men, especially, why do you think so many men can't do that? Right? Like it's just like they either don't know how, they don't have the motivation, their victim mentality is like, maybe that's all of those things. But like, It just seems like that most men are just lost. I was talking to a person on an earlier podcast and I said, hey, I look at my life and I'm content. Like, I love my life. There are things about my life that I could do better or challenges I meet and all that kind of stuff. But I don't have this deep longing to change everything or to change just a majority of, like, I'm a happy person. I talked about my bucket list and how I keep having to add new things to my bucket list because I keep doing all the things on my list. And I truly want, and that's one of the reasons and the motivations we started Maxed Out Man was that I want to teach other men how to feel that. Right.
Yeah.
But why do you think so many men just are having such a difficult time? I kind of have my own opinion, but I'm interested in yours.
Absolutely. And the question I'd ask you, Kevin, then is who was the significant person in your life that saw you, that encouraged you, that called you apart? Obviously, your wife, Michelle, but was there anyone else? Like, because often that's part of the thread for men like yourself who found this place. Was there,
you know, the only, this is going to sound really religious, but in my case, like I grew up, I started raising myself at 7. My mom was a drug addict. She's an alcoholic. She would disappear for days at a time. I had no adult supervision for like a week to 2 weeks at a time. My dad is not a strong father figure. And so I really didn't have anybody to teach me those things. And if I look back on my life, I actually think that, you know, God kind of looked down and thumped me on the forehead and said, hey, I'm going to give you these gifts and this mind and this heart, and you continue to pursue these things. You're going to screw it up all over the place, but here's some of the, you know, and so like, that's that, again, it sounds kind of religious, but I really feel like that was my, and I'm not talking about like, oh, I read my Bible for 60 minutes a day, and therefore I learned all these things about Christ and I made these decisions. It's trial and error. And I always talk about taking the, you know, an entrepreneurial approach to life. To where you try things, you fail, you try those things again, you make adjustments. And so that in my case, and I don't wish that on anybody, but in my case, there actually wasn't one of those people. So I hate to ruin your answer, but that was like, in my case, there really wasn't.
What I'm hearing though is that, and it's a similar journey to myself. What I'm hearing though is there was a willingness in you to inquire, to explore, to ask for help, to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Was that how you cultivated and developed? And that's the point. To answer your question, that's the point. What I noticed with most men, even had it with a client recently, somehow, particularly in our conditioning and culture, and there are many threads to answer your question, but one of the biggest things is we've been conditioned that I don't feel okay to ask for help. I don't feel safe to ask for help. I've got to figure this out myself. I'm supposed to have my shit sorted. Yep. And, you know, this client who was aware had done, a lot of work on himself, and he was in a bit of financial challenge with his business. And he said, I just found it so hard to just ask for help. And so of all the layers to answer your question, I think there's a fundamental piece in a lot of men. We think we've got to have our stuff sorted. We think we've got to have this mask of, you know, having it together. We think we've got to have all the answers for our wife, for our kids. Yeah. And like your journey from a little boy, there was a part of you that knew you didn't have it all sorted. You had to ask for help. You had to learn. You had to inquire. And I think for any of the listeners, that's one of the key shifts. Yeah. It's just to notice where you resist. Just asking for help. Who are the men in your life? You know, who are the friends? Who are the mentors? Who, you know, who's the faith-based organization that you're with or the, you know, but, and I think So why? So that I would say is a key thread. Why are we afraid to ask for help? If you think about in the generalization, the story we were told as little boys, yep, you know, and all of the studies now around that, you know, we were just taught that, you know, the expression of man up, you know, that we were just taught that you got to
rub some dirt in it.
Yeah, you know, like, and that conditioning and that sort of cultural inability to ask for help. Yeah. And, you know, the vulnerability that comes with that. And think about all of the sporting analogies, particularly in the US, you think about all that, you know, you got to man up, you got to step up, you got to, you know, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is we all need help at times. We need a teacher, we need a friend, we need a, you know, a guide, you know, those sorts of things. So I really think that's one of the fundamental shifts, you know, is that ability to, you know, just find, you know, particularly other men, see if there's other men that you can just talk to me. What I want to learn more about being a father. I want to learn more about my business. I want to learn more about my physical health, you know. And we do it in some areas, like physical health's a great area. You'll see a lot of men who go, yeah, I want to learn about getting fit. I want to learn how to lift weights.
Yeah, I'll hire a personal trainer, right? Yeah, so.
Yeah. If we could apply that to some of the other areas of our life and not think we got to have it all sorted, that's a game changer.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's good because I've seen, and you've seen this over the last 10 to 20 years, right? This idea of coaching and group coaching and mentoring and all that, especially in the men's space, I think is becoming a safer space for that. We had a 3-day workshop a couple of weeks ago that were 90 minutes each day. And I frankly was amazed at the stuff that these guys would share with perfect strangers that they literally have not even said hello to on a webinar. You know, they're talking about their sex addictions and the stuff that's going on with their marriage and how they're on the verge of divorcing their wives, even though they love them, and, you know, things that they're dealing with their emotional state and all that. Like, you know, if you don't have someone in your life to do that, look for coaching, mentoring, and all that. And sometimes it's paid and sometimes it's free. And, you know, however that works, look for that exposure. But I think being open and honest and vulnerable and asking for help. And the irony is always like, if, you know, and you've probably seen a cartoon or a meme or something where the guy's standing in quicksand and sinking and, you know, hey, it's, you know, I don't need any help, and you're down to your knees and I still don't need any help. I can take care of this myself. And all of a sudden they're dead, right? They're completely under the quicksand. We would never allow that. Most people would never allow that to happen, yet you can figuratively, spiritually, and emotionally allow that to happen to yourself as a man, especially. All of us do it, but it's like why we can't make that connection between those two actions is something we all need to work on, I think.
And the point you mentioned is, I don't think men aren't willing to be vulnerable. I think men need to feel safe to be vulnerable.
Correct. Right. 100%.
And that's the challenge. And often that comes by being held and witnessed by other strong men.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like your webinar, like when we get together as men, and I run, you know, group programs around the world, when men are witnessed and held by other men, this is how we learn in traditional cultures, around the campfire with men.
Right.
Yeah. Then I feel safe. I feel safe to share. I feel safe to be vulnerable. Yeah. And we all did it as a tribe. You know, the lone wolf, you know, the hero in the movies, the lone hero, it's actually not the way it occurred. It was always in tribe. It was always in support. The hero always had a mentor, always had his support team, you know. So, it's that vulnerability's there. Find a place where you feel safe.
I love it. Well, any other last parting advice for these men that we're having an opportunity to reach into right now?
Well, remember, inspiration or desperation.
Love that.
And part of, you know, your work, my work, is to inspire the listeners. Yeah. And just make a move, whether it's sitting silently for 5 minutes, whether it's reaching out to a friend or a mentor, getting a coach, getting to know yourself, going into nature. And, you know, we've got the free course that I've got here, www.freeminicourse.com, and it's all about freedom and flow. So if anyone's called to this Yep, you can get the course. It teaches you some practices. It gives you some of the distinctions. And at the end of the course, there's an opportunity if anyone wants to reach out and just book a call. If this is calling you, if you want an alignment call to see where you're at, who could I get support from? You know, reach out to myself, reach out to you, I'm sure, because, you know, our mission, you talk a lot about mission. You know, my mission is to support men to remember their magnificence.
I love it. I love, first of all, good domain name. I love that. I also love the fact that you refer to your wife as your beloved. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I call mine has two names, either my smoke show hot wife, which is how she's in my phone, or my bride. I typically, even in, you know, I do it on these podcasts, refer to as my wife, but I almost always refer to as my bride, because that's the way, that's that cherished moment when she's walking down the aisle. And I try to remember that she was my bride, and she willingly gave herself to me for the rest of my life. And so that's that language. And I love the way that you say beloved. I'll put those show notes, those in the show notes. I really appreciate you coming on board. If you want to find out more about Max Out Man, go to maxoutman.com. Like I said before, we're on all the social medias. Just search for Max Out Man. Make sure you pick up and check out some of these other episodes as well. And I know the True Freedom podcast, we'll put some links to that as well. Bodhi has that. And just check out what he's got going on. I love the idea of getting a free little mini course. You can look at that, learn about flow, and everything that we talked about here today. So Bodhi, I really appreciate you, man. I'll have to, I'm not a surfer. I've tried a couple of times, but I'll have to come down under and let you teach me how to surf, and we can sit out there like we're on Point Break, the movie, and, you know, and look into the sunrise. So I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thank you and all the listeners. Yeah, it's been lovely to connect, Kevin.
If you're looking to really maximize your life and become the man you were made to be, head over to maxedoutman.com and get your journey started today.